This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Neil Caskey, CEO of the National Corn Growers Association. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer and their vision of health for all, hunger for none. Open Mic continues with National Corn Growers CEO Neil Caskey next. As a leader in the industry, we at Bayer have the opportunity and responsibility to help address the challenges around sustainability and ensure that we can all thrive while using our planet's resources in a sustainable way. Sustainability is an integral part of our operations, and we believe that farmers and agriculture can be a part of the solution to many of the planet's biggest challenges. Whether that's helping growers utilize new technologies to get more out of their land or incentivizing carbon-smart farming practices such as strip or no-till and planting cover crops, we're committed to innovate, grow, and partner with farmers to help shape what's possible and further our vision of health for all, hunger for none. For more on Bayer's sustainability efforts, visit www.bayer.com/en/US/United States Sustainability. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Neil Caskey's career has been based in serving farmers and their commodity organizations. After a time at the American Soybean Association, Neil came to the National Corn Growers and was selected to serve as their chief executive officer. Caskey says there are a number of challenges facing corn farmers, including trade, government regulations, high input costs, and now lower prices for their crops. Caskey says support resources are limited.
You know, we don't have a lot of good solutions other than, you know, the things that we can do, with, obviously, within the Farm Bill to, you know, protect crop insurance and strengthen that safety net is obviously where we're focused there. And then just kind of longer term, you know, we want to make sure that ethanol market and our animal agriculture markets are strong here domestically, so that you know, we obviously farmers want to, that's how they want to, you know, earn their money is through the markets, and so those are the areas that obviously have most of our attention.
Just before we started our conversation, we received word that the Supreme Court had offered a unanimous decision in the Sackett versus EPA case, and it looks like they agreed with agriculture that the significant nexus test was out of bounds. How has WOTUS affected corn farmers up until now, and what do you hope that this Supreme Court decision offers us moving ahead?
I'll just start with a sigh of relief. Winds are few, it seems like, and hard to find in this world, and so, you know, that announcement was we're still looking at it, but, you know, it was a very positive one, and you know, now we just obviously want the administration to, you know, to rework it to make sure that it's a workable definition for agriculture. It seems like a simple request, but it's imperative, and so but just relieved that we, you know, this is a good first step, and now the pressure's on the administration.
I recall President of the American Farm Bureau, Zippy Duvall, suggesting at their convention in Puerto Rico that a farmer shouldn't have to have a lawyer and a consultant to determine where he stood with regard to a regulation over land policy. Is a clear definition on the horizon, and what would corn farmers ask?
Between WOTUS and so many other regulations, you know, you probably do need a lawyer. But, you know, for us, we need something that doesn't, when we talk about WOTUS, you know, we don't want anything that just creates unreasonable and hard restrictions on, you know, how folks work their land. And so, I mean, it's the, you know, a mud puddle, a ditch, you know, those are just, you know, not things that we're putting any barges on, any boats on. And so, I think we need to be just respectful of the landowner and how, obviously, they run their farm. And so, I mean, when we think about what the administration needs to do, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. He needs to work for agriculture in working lands.
Let's stay in the regulatory area. Summer E15 sales were finally approved almost at the last minute. What's the road ahead to higher ethanol blends?
Grateful for that decision. Now, I will say it was like 2 weeks after they announced their tailpipe decision, which, you know, we're not so grateful for that one. But again, we'll take a win where we can get it. That is good for this year and hopefully next year. But, you know, for us, as we look ahead, Jeff, you know, it's the Next Generation Fuels Act. And so we want to make sure that consumers have access to cars with internal combustion engines. You know, obviously, you know, EVs are going to have a place, but they shouldn't be the only choice. And so we want to avoid that kind of scenario. I think most of America probably does as well. And ethanol is perfectly situated to solve the problems that we think the administration wants to solve in terms of climate change and inflation. We, meaning ethanol, we are perfectly situated to do that. So, I'll just say very, very grateful for the waiver this year. Wish it would have come a lot sooner so there wasn't the stress in the marketplace that there was. But it's here, and consumers will be able to benefit from a cheaper and cleaner fuel. And so for that, we're grateful. But longer term, it's going to be solved through that Next Generation Fuels Act. And that's that is obviously, as you well know, a very, very, very high priority of ours.
So do you feel like that Washington is grading all vehicles the same? I recall Josh Rowe with the Kansas Corn Growers testifying before the House Oversight Subcommittee suggesting that no electric vehicle doesn't have a tailpipe, but there are emissions that are involved in generating the energy for that vehicle. Do you think that combustible engines with renewable fuels and electric vehicles are being graded on the same curve?
It doesn't feel like that, does it, Jeff? I mean, like, as you know, when I look at that tailpipe emission proposal, I mean, it is an effective mandate for EVs. And so, you know, you think about the standards that it is calling for in light duty and medium duty vehicles, you know, that could result, I think their estimates were like 67% of the fleet, you know, the cars on the road would be EVs within that category by 2032. And so, I mean, that really feels like a mandate to us. And to be clear, we don't have any problem, you know, with the goal of lower emissions, but we just think that there ought to be options available to society that will allow us to do that. Ethanol, again, is a very, you know, if we are sincerely interested in addressing climate change and we're sincerely interested in bringing inflation down, I mean, we've got like this incredible product that can do both things right now. We don't have to wait. And I think that's why, you sensed Josh's frustration when he testified last week, and you talk to any corn farmer across the land and they're scratching their head and trying to understand why we are pushing EVs so hard when we can solve some of those same problems with a product that is coming from America's heartland and put it to work today. That's what frustrates a lot of people.
So last week on this program, we had Kevin Lukey with the Chevron Renewable Energy Group, and obviously they're high on biofuels and more from the vegetable oil to biodiesel in the next gen area. Is the future as bright for ethanol, or what bureaucratic or legislative decisions need to be made that would provide an opportunity for this new horizon and corn-based ethanol?
We think it can be, for sure. It's like, you look at the modern rural economy, and it was built on the back of America's corn and and soybean farmers, you know, through biofuels. And so we think it's going to be bright, and that's why, you know, we are pushing so hard on this Next Generation Fuels Act, because, you know, it will result in cars with internal combustion engines that are burning fuels that are, you know, low carbon, high octane fuels, you know, a more efficient, cleaner burning vehicle. And so I think at the end of the day, you know, that's what people want. You know, if we're trying to address climate change, we're trying to, you know, address inflation, you know, let's go about this in a smart way. And so by no means anti-EV at all. And we get that, you know, we are heading down that path, and, you know, there is a role for them to play as well. But it can't be, it cannot be, you know, the only option for consumers in 10 years is to go and you know, pick an EV, which is going to be a more expensive choice. And so I don't think that that's necessarily fair to, you know, to the rest of the country as well, particularly when, you know, we have options available to us that can address those problems.
Neil, with over 5 billion bushels of corn used annually for ethanol production, is it safe to say that the nation's energy policy could be almost as important as the farm bill?
Oh, without question. And so, you know, we think that it is. And you look at, you know, again, going back to the modern rural economy, and what the RFS, you know, did over the last, you know, 20 years. And so, you know, we think, a more complete energy policy, you know, that includes things like, you know, high octane, low carbon fuels like ethanol, can keep rural America strong for the next 20 to 25. And, you know, I think no one should be opposed to that. Farmers, they want to, they compete for markets. We owe it to them to build them here first in the U.S. And obviously ethanol is a critical one. And obviously, you know, make sure that we're not neglecting our markets overseas as well. Another concern we haven't got to, but worried about that as well. So
whether it's energy policy or whether it's farm policy, it appears in order to be successful, agriculture has to have partners, collaboration, working together. Who are your partners here that will help you in the fuels area? And what about the farm bill? Is a larger chorus required to see success on the Hill?
It's hard to do anything by yourself. Few things that have been done well have been done alone. And I think that certainly applies in our line of work. And, you know, you think back to something, you know, big like the RFS and, you know, how, you know, there were environmental, the community was supportive of that, and just so many partners kind of came together to solve, you know, an energy crisis at the time. And so, I mean, there just last week, Jeff, I was at the groundbreaking ceremony for Lock and Dam 25 on the Mississippi River. And, you know, it was a result of decades of hard work and a partnership between farmers and labor unions and transportation sector. And, you know, and here we are breaking ground on a just game changing project that was a result of partners. And so, you know, I look at that and I look at, you know, what we're trying to do in the ethanol space is, you know, obviously there are jobs that could be lost, you know, if we mandate EVs. And I don't think that that's good for America either. And so I think a similar model of farmer, labor, and auto, and oil, I think that that's all doable. I mean, I think we're all equally alarmed about the latest proposal and open to creating solutions that's going to be good for our country. And that's what we all want. I was heartened, and the timing was pretty special. That was last week. And just hats off to, I mean, there's groups like Illinois Corn that threw their shoulder into that project way back in the 90s. And some of those same farmers, Greg Gunther and Gary Niemeyer, you know, some leaders from NCJ and Illinois Corn from back in the 90s, you know, they stood there with the Corps and folks in the administration breaking ground. It's a testament to what can be done with strong partnerships and a lot of vision and just perseverance to never quit. Now we just got to get the rest of those locks built too. So when you talk about partnership, that is a result of that type of that spirit. And we need that in farm policy. Obviously, you know, that's a big bill with a lot of different components to it. The farm bill, we will be successful when we have a lot of aligned interests that are making the case for farm and food to Congress. And I know that there are a lot of folks that are doing some amazing work to that end right now.
Neil, some commodity groups are calling for an adjustment for reference prices and also the opportunity to update base acres. Where do those two topics fit with corn growers?
We are focused on improvements to, you know, Title I as a whole, so, you know, ARC and PLC, and that's because, you know, the grower, we did a lot of surveys and talked to a lot of farmers and had a similar process to, that so many have followed, and they are most concerned about revenue losses, and so obviously that's something that, you know, that incorporates both price and yield, and so so we're really focused on trying to strengthen both of those programs.
So before sustainability became a buzzword in Washington, it was the National Corn Growers Association that funded and put their shoulder behind the Soil Health Partnership, the precursor to what now is a part of a lot bigger discussion, and wondering how conservation and sustainable intensification will find its way into the Farm Bill. Where do corn growers stand on this policy that you've been working on for some time?
Corn farmers have an awesome record of sustainable performance, and so you know that, and we're blessed to be able to tell that story. And so we had programs years ago. There was a Soil Health Partnership that started years ago, and now we are happy to be partnering, you know, back to the spirit of partnership with the United Soybean Board and the National Pork Board through the Farmers for Soil Health. And we are a grantee of the Climate Smart Grant Program through USDA, and that's really focused on 30 million acres of cover crops by 2030. And so we're excited to be a part of that. I know that there are so many growers that are already doing all the right things, and we want to make sure that obviously that they and that story and is known, and that work is obviously rewarded. But every single thing that we do, you know, from Farm Bill to ethanol policy to trade, I mean, everything that we're pushing for out in Washington requires, you know, policymakers to know and believe that America's corn farmers are taking good care of the land that they're farming on and the water and air around it, and they are. And so we're obviously working in programs that allow obviously good farmers to be even better. And so so excited to be a part of all of that.
At the beginning of 2023, the issue of trade with Mexico was at the top of the list for corn farmers. Has there been a resolution, or what stage of the game are we now, and why is that so important?
Yeah, Mexico is a critical market, a next door neighbor to us, and they have are a great customer of ours. They want our corn. They need it, and so we are wrestling with the decrees that, you know, are effectively banning biotech white corn, and you know, it's kind of little murky on what it means for everything else. But the administration announced back in March, Jeff, that was right like days before we headed down to Orlando for Commodity Classic, that it was initiating a technical consultation through USMCA with Mexico to kind of talk through some of their specific concerns. That's currently where they are. We need them. We have always said, you know, this is going to be settled in a panel dispute, and so we're not there now. We would like to be there really, really soon, because I know that there are a lot of growers in states like Nebraska and other places, and Illinois and other states that grow a lot of white corn that are affected by this. And so we've got to get to the bottom of this quickly. It's unfortunate that we're, you know, this is a trade agreement enforcement that we're dealing with here. And so, you know, you agree to things, and then suddenly those things are no longer acceptable, or at least one thing is no longer acceptable. Only time in a trade matter like this, where a single commodity has been singled out like this, and that's us, it's corn, and you know, we are fighting that on behalf of our growers. I'll say this, that the implications for what we're dealing with right now in Mexico extend well beyond the cornfield, and so this is a rules based trading system that we are fighting for and to preserve, because we believe in global markets for corn farmers, and we need to rely on sound science and rules to be able to compete effectively. And that's why we're in this game, Jeff, and we will go to the mat on this one to produce a positive result for America's corn farmers. Very grateful that we have bipartisan support. This is something where Democrats and Republicans alike are committed to helping us. And so, they believe in obviously America's corn farmers, and they also believe in a rules-based trading system. And so, because of that, we've got the agreement on our side. We've got the facts on our side. We've got the law on our side. We are confident that we're going to, that we're going to prevail ultimately. But man, we would like to be here by now. And so the sooner we can get to that end game, the happier we will all be. And we are pushing, on our end to get us there sooner.
Neil, whether it's corn, whether it's dried distilled grains with solubles, whether it's ethanol or other corn products, what would you like to see from the administration with regard to trade?
For us, it's just like, hey, let's get back on the offense. Let's identify those markets where we can compete the most effectively. And start there. And so we are all for selling corn in all its form, including meat. And when we have when the rules are fair, we can compete with anyone. And so I want to get past this Mexico issue, but I also I don't want to lose there's just no momentum right now and trying to develop some of these other markets for U.S. corn. We're incredible producers of that amazing crop and the products that come from it, and we just want more market access to be able to sell that in all the right places. And so we're ready to get back on offense. We're ready to be helpful in doing that. We got a great resource in the U.S. Grains Council. They do tremendous work in developing markets for U.S. corn in all its forms in countries around the globe. We just need that market access and hope that we can get to a place where we are fighting for those types of agreements in different countries. And so I've heard the administration talk about we've got to make a better case for trade, just because it doesn't, we've obviously, Americans view it differently now, right, wrong, or indifferent. And I think we've got to solve that problem first, or it's going to be really hard to kind of get a lot of momentum. And I know corn farmers are ready to tell that story. We've got a great story to tell on trade. It is good for us. It is good for the country, and it's good for the world when we are doing business with more countries. And so we're ready to get back on offense there, Jeff.
Well, Neil Caskey, we salute your service to the agriculture industry over your career so far and wish you much success as the CEO of the National Corn Growers. And this won't be the last time you join us on Open Mic, but we'd like to thank you for being here and taking the time. Neil, it is Open Mic, and today, sir, you've got the last word.
Well, Jeff, thank you for your service to agriculture. We are all better because of you and the work that you do as well. I would just say I'm looking out at Memorial Day weekend, and I remember Secretary Vilsack has been such a great advocate for rural America, and he really always points out that a disproportionate amount of the men and women in uniform that are serving our country come from small towns. I came from one of those towns, and just grateful for those, my friends and others that have served our country, first and foremost, grateful for that, and just even more grateful for those that paid that ultimate made that ultimate sacrifice. And so and a lot of them came from small towns like the ones that we came from, Jeff. And so this weekend, I'm thinking about them, and I'm grateful for their service, and I hope that in the work that we do at NCGA, we are able to honor it in some small way.
Our thanks to Neil Caskey, CEO of the National Corn Growers Association, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer and their vision of health for all, hunger for none. Learn more at Bayer.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.